Off yesterday, we were talking about that famous story that happened in terms of Kriyas HaTorah, where they started to lay from the wrong parsha, and a whole machlokes erupted as to what the next protocol is supposed to be. You're supposed to just simply continue laying. You're supposed to actually recite a new bracha. So there were two different reasons that were given for reciting a new bracha, and they were both based on two statements in Rishonim. One of them was the primary sin that we've been talking about, that if you make a bracha on a vegetable, then you drop the vegetable and you pick up a different vegetable to make to eat, then you have to recite another bracha. And that was no question. Do we follow the Rishonim? Not follow the Rishonim. Then the second issue that the Rishonim raised was, when the Rishonim seemed to say, if I made a bracha on something, and then I dropped it, and then I picked it up. It's the same thing. The only problem is there was a significant break in between. There was a hefsek in between. But the hefsek didn't have any speaking to it. It was just simply silence. Does that constitute a hefsek to also require new brachas? There are really two separate issues in Rishonim. So we had one group of Rishonim was saying that for both reasons, you have to recite a new bracha. And there are others who are saying that for neither reason, you have to recite a new bracha. So machlokes b'nei hakhalachot from one extreme to the other. So how does all this play out in terms of us l'maaseh? So as we said already, this is really a dual question. It's a question both in terms of birchas hanan, in terms of the vegetables, and in terms of kriyas haTorah. So the Mishneh Berurah seems to almost give a little bit of a split psach in this area. Mishneh Berurah says that when it comes to hilchos birchas hanan, we're going to be very, very wary to tell the person to recite a new bracha. This is where it's a sofek, it's a machlekes, maybe somebody we should make it, it's a something brachas. We have all kind of different possibilities in the last couple of days. And definitely, Mishneh Berurah throws his hands up and he says that we had a lot of vegetables on the table, and you picked up one. We're not really convinced to say that it's one, that one vegetable in contrast to all the others. And probably everything that was on the table, everything in front of you, was all covered by the original bracha. And therefore, we're just going to wage on, forget making a second bracha. Mishneh Berurah was noted. When it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, so he has a similar idea, but it gets a little bit tricky because what is the parallel to the vegetables in the sense of what's called in front of you? So we already saw yesterday, it was a little bit nuanced. Is what's called in front of you the whole Sefer Torah? Is what's called in front of you all the Sefer Torah in Shul? Is what's called in front of you the two Sefer Torah that were taken out for Kriyas HaTorah that morning? Where do you draw the line? What's the parallel to the vegetables? The vegetables is a lot easier for us to understand. Yeah, got six carrots in front of me. So my bracha is at all six carrots. It's not, the bracha is not impacting on the 25 carrots in the refrigerator. So if all the carrots get disqualified, I have to start over again. So where would we carry over that parallel to Kriyas HaTorah? So the Mishneh Berurah quotes many who say, maybe when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, the parallel is as follows. If it's in front of you, what does in front of you mean? It's open in front of you. The Sefer Torah is open in front of you. And by mistake, you made a bracha thinking you're supposed to lay three columns earlier. But five columns are open in front of you. So maybe that's called Munach Lefanav. The fact that you have to start rolling and finding and taking some return from other places, that's really too far away. That's not considered to be in front of you. It's hard to envision that the bracha is going to take effect on that. That's the source that many shuls follow, that almost a little bit of a compromise view, that when this happens, if the Sefer Torah was open and the Makor just slipped a little bit, he gave you the wrong column, nishkafelach. But if you really made a mistake 30 columns away, so that would necessitate a new bracha. This happens often, you know. It happens. So it happens on Chanukah sometimes. They point to the wrong day of the Nisim. It happens very, very common on Parshas Shoftim, Parshas Kiseitzeh, because the very end of Parshas Shoftim, there's a series of psukim that start Kiseitzeh leMilchama Oyvecha. The only problem is that's not Parshas Kiseitzeh. That's the end of Parshas Shoftim. So sometimes inexperienced Balkaria, the Bar Mitzvah Kiddush Shaking, will show you with the yad to the wrong Kiseitzeh. So what do you do? Usually it's close enough, usually half an hour away. So usually you just wave on with the new bracha. That's the hachra that the Mishneh Berurah seems to say. So it's a little bit of a split in terms of it's not so much of a split, it's just one way trying to just determine, conceptualize what's called Munach Lefanav, what's not.
Was that the fact that they started leaning?
So
they
that,
started leaning.
mean
They
that
made a
mean
bracha, they started leaning.
that
So it's like
goofy
the case of the cat, right?
it was even worse. It's
I don't
better
know
or
if it's
worse.
true. I think it's true because he tasted the carrot. Now he's just having
Yeah, it's the wrong lane, but that's not the part of the lane that I want to relate.
Okay, but
So that's
you
the
that's the Torah.
Yeah, the shot. Right, the question is, could you even argue that? Well, but you haven't seen later on Basha. Like, what would happen? Let the Tzimtzum Shlomer Shul made a total mistake. Came Chanukah Rosh Chodesh. They laying the Chanukah before Rosh Chodesh. But the Yevon did not Yotze. Of course, they Yotze. But the Yevon Tadav Shein Tadir is not a Din. But the Yevon it's Din Lechatchila. So it's hard to understand, like, why is this such a tumult? Like, why?
Should they have continued
leaving? Yeah, I'm not sure. Right. You get the impression from the story that, no, you got to stop and go back to where you're supposed to leave. If you would have asked me, I would have said, so just finish. What's the big deal? I don't know. I'm not sure. So going back to Rishalmi for a moment, there were really two different statements of the Rishalmi. There was the primary deal with the Rishalmi about when you make a bracha and the food falls and you can't retrieve it. Then there was the other half of the Rishalmi about the food that falls and you can retrieve it. So what was the Lashon HaRishalmi on that one? The Rishalmi said, person makes a bracha on the pugla, the Torah, whatever it was, below asur liyadei. And it wasn't in his hands. What does that mean, it wasn't in his hands? I.e., he dropped it, and then he picked it up again. That's what the asur liyadei presumably means. So the Rambam seems to have a totally different interpretation of what lo asur liyadei even means, what that second statement of the Rishalmi is all about. So take a look at the 12th of the Rambam Kamos. So the Rambam writes, in the 12th of the Rambam Kamos, Eid b'varchin al-ocham in al-ochlin v'lo al-mashkin in al-mashkin ad she'yavol l'fanav. Rambam says you shouldn't make a bracha on a food or on a drink until it's literally in front of you. If you made a bracha and somebody wasn't here yet, I make a hamotzlach and then somebody brings in the challah, then I am required to recite a new bracha. Where did the Rambam get this from? The answer is this is what the Rambam learned shot in lo asur liyada. We thought lo asur liyada means I made a bracha on my apple and then right before I took a bite, I dropped it. Lo asur liyada. I didn't succeed in eating my apple. The Rambam says that's not what lo asur liyada means. Lo asur liyada means I made a bracha and it wasn't here in the past tense. It wasn't here. So then I'm required to make a new bracha. That's a whole different ballgame. It could be they're both right. It could be both did it correct. But the Rishalmi is unclear what the Rishalmi said. So we have multiple interpretations of what the Rishalmi was all about. So again, we know the primary date of the Rishalmi that we were talking about was a person makes a bracha, drops the food, and can't retrieve it anymore. So that's a huge problem. Depending what you think about the Pesach and Halacha and Rishalmi, you will not make a bracha. Then there's the secondary Rishalmi that's talking about Birech La'os Liyado. So we're not sure, does La'os Liyado mean that it fell, I picked it up, but there was a hefsek of silence? Is that what the Rishalmi means? Or does it mean, not that it fell, La'os Liyado means, not that it didn't come down in my hand, it was never here in my hand in the first place. So different interpretations in Rishalmi, what in the world Rishalmi meant. But going back to what we spoke about the edisha yesterday, there were those who argued that a hefsek of shtika is a problem. There were those who insisted, based on Rishalmi, that you made a bracha on something and then you dilly-dally. You didn't eat the food for 5 minutes. You didn't talk. You didn't eat the food. You made a bracha on laning and then you drained around for a couple of minutes. You didn't do it. You didn't talk, but the mice, you didn't start laning. So is there a requirement to recite a new bracha or not? Is this idea of a shehiya mishtika, a hefsek mishtika, does that halacha really exist or not? So we saw yesterday, the Rishalmi, according to many, says it does. Others claim the Babli says it doesn't. But comes the Beis Yosef and says that one thing is clear, we have to quantify when that amount of time is. We mentioned this yesterday, that even according to the Rishalmi, even according to those Rishonim who say that making a bracha and then a delay, even with silence, poses a challenge, poses a problem. A delay of how long? A delay of a split second? A delay of 10 minutes? What is the shear? So come to the Beis Yosef. We take a look at the 11th of the Mamma Kamos. Umistavr is the third line. Umistavr, the shear ik of zeh would appear logically. He says, that's never Gemara, but he says he thinks that the shear is Kadei She'ela Shalom Tamid L'Rav. What we always call the Gemara says in many areas of Halacha that anything that takes place within this very, very small interval of Tarchidei Dibur, the amount of time it takes to give Shalom Aleichem, Talmud to a Rebbe, behind a Shalom Aleichem Rebbe Amori. He says anything that's less than that amount of a second and a half, is totally negated. It's totally meaningless in halacha. We know this from other areas of halacha. The Gemara says that if a person, let's say, does something in some kind of a binding chalos or something, tries to make a transaction, and then a split second backpedals and says, no, that's not what I meant. So, talk to the Dibor, you get back out. We know this from Ruchos Tefillah. So if a person makes a mistake in a bracha, so he says, Kela Kodosh, or he says, Tshuva, he says, Kela Kodosh, I'm not a Kodosh. He doesn't say, whoops. He says, just quickly switches it. Anything that switched within Tachanei Dibor is canceled. So the Beis Yosef says that just as Tachanei Dibor enables you to revoke anything that you said, Tachanei Dibor, less Tachanei Dibor, is still considered to be close enough that it's not considered to be a break at all. And he has a raya for this. But Dugma Zamrinim B'Yushavi Daroah. There is a sugya in the ninth parak of Maseches Brachas in the Yerushalmi, Gabi Brachim, about the brach that we recite on lightning, also by celebrations. The person was in the bathroom, and all of a sudden, she's lightning. He has thunder. A fairly common shaila. He was in the bathroom, and he has all of a sudden a boom of thunder. He can't make a brach in the bathroom. So what does he do? So if he's able to go out of the bathroom and he's able to recite the bracha within 2 seconds, so then he recites the bracha. So then if not, then he shouldn't. So then he shouldn't go out. We learn from here. However, we do derive from here, this is the Shia. If there's an amount of silence and constant absence, we're not even sure that this is true altogether, but if it is, so then the Shia has got to be Tachidegi. That's the only Shia that we have any precedent for, the only Shia that makes any sense. So the bottom line is that this entire Sugya revolved around a Tosfos that quotes the Yerushalmi in Ketz Mevarchin, starting off with the dropping of the vegetable, all the different nuances that emanate from that sugya, the different pshatim in the Yerushalmi, different interpretations of Yerushalmi, and past thank Yerushalmi. So it's definitely a case of a baruch, and definitely has impact on those brachas, but strangely enough, the entire sugya doesn't even appear in the Baal. So we'll make a sea of on the vegetables that are falling onto the floor, move on to the next. Yes, that's a different interpretation of that Yerushalmi, right? That's a whole other nuance of the Yerushalmi, right? So we may accept that also. We may accept multiple pshatim in the Yerushalmi. Yeah, so we assume la halacha that even that there is no such thing as a hefsek b'shtika. We don't accept that whole notion of hefsek b'shtika. As many Rishonim said, it's rejected by the Baal, but the Baal talks about the kind of the challah. Okay, so talking about kind of the challah, we'll move on to the next, lead us into the next again. So the Gemara. So the Gemara begins a whole discussion on the Lamentasim and Sefer Brachos about the bracha of Hamotzi. About first thing about talking about making Hamotzi on a regular night, and the Gemara talks about making Hamotzi on Shabbos, and the Gemara moves into making Hamotzi on Pesach night. So our primary sugya is going to be the recitation of Hamotzi on the night of the Seder. The Leil Seder has certain unique aspects to the Birchas Hamotzi. So one of the issues that comes up, well Pesach night, since Manish Tana Lezim Kol Leilos, is that on all of the nights, so we opt to make a bracha b'motzi on a full challah roll, if we can. That's considered to be more of a kavod. Not just because of lechem mishnah. In the regular time, if I have 2 pieces of bread in front of me, one's a roll, one's a slice of bread, so then I should, again, if all else is equal, so then I should go for the challah roll. That's considered to be more respectful to the bracha. But comes the Gemara and says that on Pesach night, all the rules begin to change. That's where the sugya begins, in the first of the Ma'amar Kavos, Amar Papa. Everybody agrees that on Pesach night, so you have to have a broken piece, a prusa. It's necessary to have a broken piece. And you have a shleima as well. We'll see as we go on just how many other matzahs you may or may not have on the table. And then you break the matzah. After you make that motzi. My time, where did this broken matzah come from? Like, why do you have to have a prusa? It's counterintuitive. Normally, you sit down to a meal, especially in Shabbos, you have the meal, so you always have a shleima. Why all of a sudden, Pesach night, we end up with a prusa? By time, lechem oniksiv. This is a special halacha based on the phrase lechem oni. The Torah describes matzah as being lechem oni, a poor man's bread, and therefore, the Gemara says, ba oni beprusa, afadam beprusa. A poor man doesn't eat his entire bread at one time, he doesn't know what tomorrow's going to bring. So he breaks apart part of the bread, leaves some stashed away for perhaps for later. So we have to replicate that on Pesach night to fulfill the din of lechem oni. So the truth is that the phrase lechem oni really has multiple interpretations, all of them being correct. This is one dimension of lechem oni. The Gemara Maseches Pesachim, the second parak, the tenth parak, speak about other meanings of the term lechem oni. Lechem oni not only speaks about how you break the bread, but lechem oni speaks about what that bread is supposed to be made of. What are the ingredients that go into the matzah in the first place? The Gemara says that the only things that can go into matzah in order for it to suffice is lechem oni has to be basically flour and water. You have to take flour from the chameshes bnei dogon, and then we have a tradition that has to be from the five species of grains, the wheat, the barley, the spelt, all the rye. We assume those are the five. Wheat and barley, we know with absolute certainty, those are, we've been eating wheat and barley for thousands of years. Old spelt and rye were a little bit of a question. There was some who raised a little bit of a question whether those are the other species. Rashi says explicitly that they are. Rashi gives the old French, the Latin words for those species. So we that's what our practice has been. We assume that old spelt and rye, the other three grains that Chazal were referring to. So a person has to take some of those, one of those grains, the flour from those grains, and mix it specifically with water. If you start to mix it with other kinds of fruit juices, then you're asking for trouble, because that's not going to be lechem oni. That's a little bit too fancy. A poor man doesn't sit down and need his grain with apple juice, with grape juice, with honey. He needs his grain simply with flour and water. That's the simplest, most basic way of making bread. And in order to fulfill the din of lechem oni, you cannot have meperos. There's a totally, completely different issue about if you put meperos in, how does that impact on the chametz part? So that's not really our topic. So we're assuming that somebody can get around the chametz problem. There is no chametz problem. But still, the Gemara says that you cannot use that for matzah. What does it mean you can't use it for matzah? The simple reading of the Gemara, the way Rashi takes it is that you can't use it for the mitzvah saseh of achilas matzah. And Leila say that there's a chi of gomah min ha-torah to eat a kizayis matzah. That's what the chumash means when it says, ba'erev teichlu matzos. So the mitzvah d'arayis, ba'erev teichlu matzos, is qualified in Pashas Re'eh by saying that matzah has to be lechem oni. So if a person eats non-lechem oni, so he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of achilas matzah. Let's say on the third day chalaboy, he's on his way to Six Flags and he wants to take some non-lechem oni. Because of day, so don't eat lechem oni. You're allowed to eat potato chips also. You're allowed to eat any matzah the whole week of Pesach. So therefore, you have nothing to lose by having non-lechem oni as well. So from the vantage point of the mitzvah of achilas matzah, there wouldn't be anything wrong with having what we call today's lingo matzah ashira. There is another reason why Ashkenazim refrain from matzah ashira. Nothing to do with the sugya. It's simply because there is a potential concern of chametz. There's a whole complicated sugya, the second parak of Pesachim, that ended up with a practice in Ashkenazi communities to refrain from these matzah ashira the whole week of Pesach because there are potential complications. The chametz process may happen a little bit quicker, depending on other factors. And therefore, our practice is to avoid matzah ashira the whole week. Since that's not in the Ikra Din, it's only B'taras Chumra, the Ramah writes that Ashkenazi Chumra was never accepted for people who are not well, for people who are older, people who have difficulty digesting regular matzah, so are permitted to eat this matzah Ashira. But again, strong, young, healthy Ashkenazim don't eat these kinds of matzahs. That's not part of our sugya. That has nothing to do with lechem oni. That has to do with the potential chashash of chametz. Some of you may remember well in the old days, when I was a little kid. So when all the matzah shiras were being sold on the market, we called it the egg matzahs. Egg matzahs are a little bit of a misnomer. Most of them are apple juice matzahs, but it doesn't sound as catchy. Apple juice matzahs, they're called egg matzahs. So the boxes used to say in them, on the one hand, they were technically kosher Pesach. On the other hand, we're not supposed to eat them. Ashkenazim generally don't eat these things. So there used to always be a disclaimer on the box of matzahs. The problem was the disclaimer was written in Yiddish, and it was in such tiny print, and it wasn't even written in Yiddish. It would just say, I remember as a little kid, it would say in Yiddish to look at the kids Shulchan Aruch paid such and such. So every customer was walking around the stores with his kitzur shulchan aruch in his pocket and checking out the fact that kitzur shulchan aruch says that we shouldn't be eating it. So that was a little bit of a joke. So in the later years, so they changed it. What did they change it to? They made it that it says, instead of saying kitzur shulchan aruch, it says, look at the code of Jewish law. So all the people had the code of Jewish law in their other back pocket. So finally, the Hashgacha, because I think they finally prevailed upon the companies to make it a little bit clearer. So now it says it in English, very, very real. If it sounds pretty bold letters, according to Ashkenazi tradition, these should only be eaten by the elderly, by those who are ill, etc. So that's what I practice. Again, that's not good. That's a chametz, a quasi chumra chametz related issue. But going back to our sugya, there is a real din in the Torah that if you want to use matzah shir for the seder, you would not fulfill the mitzvah. Why is that? because that lacks of lechem oni. So there the Gemara is using lechem oni not as describing what you're supposed to do to the matzah, but rather how do you make the matzah? The matzah is baked in a certain way with certain ingredients, otherwise you're running the risk of it not being lechem oni. Then the Gemara has a totally different interpretation of lechem oni. It only doesn't even come from the word oni, it's related to the word onim to speak about. Lechem she'on melozorim harbe. That on Pesach night we do a lot of talking at the Seder. We say Magid, we sing Hallel. So somebody mitzvah shebedibur that we do on Pesach night. So lechem she'on melozorim harbe means that these mitzvahs have to take place in the presence of the matzah. Means you don't say Magid and then by motzi matzah bring out the matzahs. You have to have the matzah at the table. B'shasa b'irsa Magid, b'shasa b'irsa Hallel. That's the key of lechem she'on melozorim harbe. There was a machlekes in Rishonim when we say that you have to say hallel on the matzah. So what does that mean? Does that mean the beginning of the hallel? Does that mean even the end of the hallel? So some Rishonim seem to say, what do you need matzah at the table at the end? You finish eating the matzah already. Yeah, motzi matzah. The matzah's done. The meals are your bench ready. So we need matzah at the end of hallel. And when the Gemara says you need the matzah at the end of the hallel, that means the beginning of the hallel. And other Rishonim say no. Lechem ani lechem dvarim harbe means that the entire station of Hallel requires the matzah to be there. So there are some who follow that practice. They make sure they leave matzahs on the, literally sitting on the table, even until the end of the seder. And there are others who, even more machmir, who say, since Rashi says that lechem she'on dvarim harbe means magid v'hallel, so magid doesn't end when magid ends. When you continue talking after the seder, chayav adam lasach mitzis mitzrayim, hilchos habezach, all the, if a person sitting around, after shir shirim, sitting and learning about Mavus Chometz Matzah, so he's learning it in Yad Adiyam, and he's talking about, he's reading the Midrashim, he's reading the Perush Nagada, so he's continuing the mitzvah of Magid, so there's some more makwit that they leave the matzah at the table at that point. This usually plays out every single year in my house, that the end of the Seder, they start to clean off the table, so I always take a piece of matzah, put it back at the table, because I'm still usually learning a little bit afterwards. And somebody else comes and removes the matzah again. I go back, put the matzah back. It's been going on for 30 years. You would think we would finally all catch on to this, whatever it is. So bottom line is that this din of lechem oni has multiple meanings. It refers to the types of ingredients in the matzah. It refers to the mitzvah of magid and challah in the context of the matzah. And here the Gemara takes it in a totally different meaning. That I have my matzah, I'm about to be yetzi by mitzvah, but it's not right to be yetzi by mitzvah on a whole matzah. I should have a broken matzah. I should break the matzah first. In order to fulfill the din of lechem oni. The question is, this halacha of breaking the matzah seems to be a contradiction to another halacha, namely the din of lechem mishnah. That we know that you sit down at a Shabbos meal, or presumably a yontif meal, and you have two pieces of bread, or two matzahs, two challahs, so it's supposed to be shleimus, it's supposed to be whole. So how do we make sense of this?
That, what would be even
the
question is, you have two
shlemis
anyway.
You have the top and bottom. Who's having two shlemis? I'm not sure yet. So the Gemara just says that Pesach night, you have your matzahs and you break one of your matzahs. So what does that mean? So that means you end up with one whole or one broken? Is that what it means? Or does it mean, wait a second, maybe I started out with three matzahs and I broke one and now I have two and I have a half. So it's not clear which way it's supposed to go. So the Rashbam, in the second of the Marmakamos, so the Rashbam is at Pesachim, right? That just because the Gemara says you need lechem oni, the Gemara doesn't mean to say that you lose out on lechem mishnah. Says the Rashbam, "Av kan b'prusa levarach alachilas matzah." You're going to use the prusa to make the alachilas matzah. Ushtei shleimus by sina mishnah motzi. Says the Rashbam, "Of course you have to have two shleimus." What's the shiloh? Says the Rashbam, "Of course you need two shleimus because you have to make a motzi." To logar mishayim tovim. Why should Why should Pesach night be any less than any other Yom Tov? So says the Rashbam, you start out on the Seder night with three matzahs, unlike any other Shabbos and Yom Tov. You start out with three because you know that you have to break one of them. So says the Rashbam, lechem oni is not negating lechem mishnah. They're both true. Says the Rashbam, you start out with three, you break one, so now you end up with two kiyumim. I have to fulfill with the lechem mishnah. Because there's two shleimus, may have a film for lechem oni because the one broken one, but not everyone agrees to the Rashbam. So the Rambam happens to say that you don't start out with three. Rambam, who put a third matzah on the table? The Rambam says you start out Pesach like any other Yom Tov, any other Shabbos, two matzahs, and you break one of the matzahs. Now you have one and a half matzahs. So the Rambam understood that lechem oni is almost like being beichel lechem mishnah. Lechem oni is redefining lechem mishnah. Normally, your lechem mishnah has to be two. a Pesach night, and Lechem Mishnah has to be broken. That is goof for the kiyum of Lechem Oni to show that my Lechem Mishnah is not full. But my Lechem Mishnah is being eaten in a bizarre manner, in a strange way, like an oni, unlike what I would do on a regular Shabbos in Yom Tov. That is what Lechem Oni means. According to the Rambam, it's almost incorrect to take a third matzah. According to the Rambam, if you start out with three matzahs and break one, you didn't prove anything. You didn't indicate the Lechem Mishnah has changed. You just threw it in you have 2.5 matzahs to eat. But yeah, according to the Rambam, you're supposed to dafka have 1.5 matzahs, not 2.5 matzahs. So there are two different opinions in the Rishonim, two different practices in Klai Yisrael today. Most of the Ashkenazim follow the view of the Rashbam, that they start out with 3 matzahs, and they break one, end up with 2.5 matzahs. And the Gra thought that the Ikra did is like the Rambam, so some of the Gra, they actually have 2 matzahs that they break one, up 1.5 matzahs. So yesh v'yesh. That which they told you when you're a little kid that you need 3 matzahs for kain levi and Yisrael, it's cute, but that is totally irrelevant. It's not do that. The fact that it says in the matzah covers, you know, kain levi Yisrael, that's just a way to remember which matzah is which. But that's not the reason. This is not Chris HaTorah. We're not doing mechafe the 3 matzahs. The 3 matzahs are there because according to the view of the Rashbam, you require both the din of Lechem Mishnah as well as the din of Lechem Oni. But what is clear, bein lefi the Rashbam, bein lefi a Rambam. Yom Tov requires Lechem Mishnah. They're just finding it out how it expresses itself on Pesach night. But lunch tomorrow, Pesach is going to have Lechem Mishnah. Shavuos, Sukkos, Shmiras Teres is going to have Lechem Mishnah. Nobody's questioning whether there's Lechem Mishnah on Yom Tov. Nobody yet. But to be followed up, there are some who are going to question that. So this is going to open up for us an entire discussion about the relationship between Yom Tov and Shabbos as it relates to the Seudah. So the starting point of the Sukkos is, of course, the Lechem Mishnah. We're just trying to figure out how to do it right on Pesach. But hopefully, from next time, we'll figure out that they're taking a step back. And wait a second, we're not even sure you need Lechem Mishnah in the first place. Yom Tov, which is good again, is to branch out to what the similarities and differences between Sudas Yom and Sudas Shabbos are. From next time, we'll continue. So again, I'll be out of town tomorrow and Friday, so no cold. But that's what we're back to. That's fine. Take care. You're welcome.